Hey, Tom, this is Chantel.
Hi, Chantel, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Well, thank you, first of all, for taking some time with me this morning. I'm really appreciate it.
My pleasure. No
Yeah.
worries.
So this morning I'm have the honor and pleasure of talking with Tom McCook. And Tom is the owner and director of Center of Balance Pilates Studio in Mountain View, and it's an amazing studio where they specialize in Pilates and Coraline and the Franklin Method, among other things. And Tom is also a faculty member for Balanced Body, and one of the teachers that participates in their mentoring program, Passing the Torch. So Tom, again, thank you so much for joining me. It really is a pleasure to get a chance to talk to you and just kind of talk to you more about what your teaching path has been like. So thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I guess I kind of just wanted to start from the beginning, and you know, I've read your bio and I've taken some courses with you, which have been such a pleasure. But I wondered if you would just share a little bit about how you came to this path of teaching movement. And if you know, sometimes I think we come to it kind of circuitously, and maybe it's not the path we think we would end up on. So I wonder if you would share a little bit with us about how you came to personal training, I think, was where you started, and then how your teaching evolved into what it is now.
It's interesting. My personal training life started actually very young. I have eight brothers, and I'm the youngest of 12 kids.
Wow.
And we're a very physical family. I grew up in the Boston area. We all played sports. We played hockey. We played everything together. And I built a gym in my cellar when I was 11 years old, and started training myself and all the neighborhood kids. And I had, you know, this whole circuit set up where we would work out together and have fun. And it was really a, I found out that it was something really young that I really enjoyed doing, but I had a natural propensity for it. And I really loved movement. I liked the effect it had on my ability to play sports better. And also, it helped to deal with my brothers a little better. It's kind of, that was my starting place, and I didn't know at the time that I'd be doing this for a living, but it just came very natural to me. It's something that I got movement, and from that regard, I really was curious about it. I enjoyed teaching exercise. I loved doing it myself more than anything. And I think that was my, where it all started for me. And then, you know, fast forward a little over 10 years, I had moved to California when I was 20, and I had done some odd jobs while I was going to school part-time, and I was managing Gold's Gym, a nighttime manager at Gold's Gym when I was, I think, in like 22 or 23 years old, and I was going to school during the day, and I just was watching how people worked out, and I found it disturbing. To watch how people, I mean, there was obviously some people in the gym that did things well, but for the most part, I just watched that. I thought people worked out in very limiting ways that weren't as good for them as things could be. So I started my own training business. Shortly after that, I decided, you know, I'm going to start training people. And within 3 months, I had 40 appointments a week, and I've been full time ever since then. And that was actually kind of the beginning of my career in working with people around exercise. And I'd already, it came natural to me because I'd already been doing it since I was 11 years old. I'd been training myself and training kids because I'd like to, not even for money, for a lot of years. Before I got into it. Money. And I just really enjoy that way of being with people. I think it's a gift to be able to be with people when they choose to come to see you. And also to help them with their health and enjoy their life more and learn how to be in their body better. And that was my beginning. Before I had gotten a lot of training, I just had my own experience. Then I got certifications and, you know, ACE and ACSM and AASM.
Right.
And in the middle of that, I had my own training business for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I got exposed to body work. I took a training in Shiatsu in the late 80s. And that really, it came really at a timely period for me because I was starting to feel a little bit, let's say, bored, but I just felt the limitations of the gym environment.
Uh-huh.
For me personally. And I felt like I wanted something more. I wanted something more around consciousness and health. Mm. I think fitness can be, or working out with weights or in the gym is health oriented, but it can also be, it can be not so healthy for the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just found, like, okay, what's another thing that I can add to my toolbox? So I took a training, a year-long training in Shiatsu with a fabulous teacher, a guy named Edward Bailey. And that really shifted how I started looking at health and the body.
Mm-hmm.
I started incorporating body work into my practice, and I would do a percentage of sessions of body work training. And after that year, I took another year-long training in what's called somatic education,
mm-hmm.
which is called the Lomi training with a man named Richard Heckler and Robert Hall,
mm-hmm.
MD, and Richard Heckler with a PhD in psychology. And it was a year-long training in how we work through the body, not just on the body, but like how do you use your body as a resource for attention,
uh-huh.
for presence, for being in your life.
Mm-hmm.
We did a combination of body work, group therapy, process work, breath work, all these things around, you know, the energy of our body and our life.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, it was a very different shift from the gym environment.
Yeah.
And I just found that I felt really seen from the teacher. This was probably my first real mentor in my life, Richard Heckler.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found him to be somebody who was incredibly present, kind and powerful all at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And that was a big impact for me. And I felt like that's the kind of teacher I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I want to teach people to actually honor themselves, take care of themselves, and look at the areas where they're not.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big shift. And then I just kept going. I just, you know, I'm really a perpetual learner. So after I finished the Lomi training, I took a 4.5-year apprenticeship in combination of Feldenkrais, structural bodywork, and cranial therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of that is when I got exposed to Pilates. That was in the early 90s. So I was 2 years into that, and one of the women in the training was a Pilates. She was in great shape. And I just asked her, "What do you do for fitness?" She looked great. She said, "I do Pilates." I had never heard of it before.
Mm.
And I found a studio in Palo Alto at the time, which was right around the corner from my house. And I started taking privates 2 times a week. And I did that for 2 to 3 times a week. I took privates for 3.5 years before I took the teacher training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been my evolution. In the middle of that, you know, I was still training people in the gym, but getting out of that, doing more body work, and then as I shifted into the Pilates training, I created my own home studio and moved completely out of the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a 3-bedroom condo. I had two offices. One was the body work room, and the other room had 2 reformers and a chair. And so I had my home office for a few years where I had, that's kind of my beginning of my Pilates career.
Uh-huh.
And I also worked at the studio that I took my training for, which was a woman named Karen Seltzer was my teacher, my first teacher in Pilates. That was all in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I fast forward a little bit forward from there, you know, I had worked in chiropractic offices doing rehabilitative exercise and body work. So I was kind of blending all the things that I had learned over the years and found it useful as my approach gradually changed.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, I think where I'm at now is I still do a little bit of body work in my training and in my work with people.
Uh-huh.
It's really influenced strongly my hands-on shoeing.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is, in one of the questions you had asked is, what do I think is needed in the community now? And I think teachers really need to learn how to do hands-on adjustments in shoeing.
Yeah.
I think that's a skill development that would be really useful in our profession.
Yeah, I agree, totally.
And a little bit of manual body work that can be incredibly helpful in sessions like muscle energy technique, active resistance, that stuff where you're really informing the client's body, but it's active on their part opposed to passive.
Right.
I think there's a lot more information that happens when it's done that way opposed to somebody just receiving a massage or receiving some type of release from a practitioner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we opened our studio in 97, that was a big shift for me in terms of going from having a private practice to now hiring people and having people in the studio outside of myself teaching. That was a big adjustment for me personally. Now I'm a studio owner and a boss. And that's been a growth process all along.
Uh-huh.
That's been great. And I think the part of it that's actually helped me the most is beginning in 1993, I took a coaching training.
Uh-huh.
Which as a student of a 6-month process, which is basically just working on personal balance and all the areas of your life where you want to make some changes, or how do you actually work with yourself on a weekly, daily basis to create personal balance.
Right.
And I took this course three 6-month long course in a group. We met once a week, and I took it in 93, I took it in 97, I took it in 99, and then in 2000, I took the teacher training for this, which was a year-long training, one-on-one, privately, with the guy who created this work, named Dennis Stevenson. Dennis Stevenson was the founder of it. It was called the Focus Corporation, and it's unfortunately Dennis died in 2003, shortly after this. But he, from taking the training, I got the rights to all the material, which I built on. I teach a coaching course now called Embodying a Balanced Life.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, actually. I've been really curious about that program.
Well, with Dennis, I learned all these great tools around creating balance in your life, looking at the areas where you want to have a little more freedom.
Uh-huh.
But I always felt that the program lacked the body.
Right. Uh-huh.
It did include the body and meditation, and I blended those things into it. So we offer this. I offer this 10-week course now.
Mm-hmm.
It has the coaching element, has meditation element, and it has movement. So it's a 2-hour course every week for 10 weeks, but over a 3-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And we do 20 minutes of meditation, 40 minutes of movement, and an hour of coaching work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a fabulous program to get people over time to incorporate all these elements of concentration, learning more about their body, and looking at their life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a for me personally, that's been what's behind how I approach my work at the studio, how I approach work with clients, how I approach working with other teachers in the studio.
Uh-huh.
Doing it mindfully and creating a space that I like to be in.
Right. And do you have the people who are participating, are they fellow teachers or are they mostly students? And what kind of, if you're working with these students, potentially through the Embodying a Balanced Life program and on a more strictly physical level, what kind of shifts are you seeing when they're putting a program like this together with their physical practice versus when they're not? I mean, you must see a fairly big shift for a lot of people.
It's a pretty amazing shift because it's a combination, it's a crossbreed of people. Some people might be teachers, some people might have no teaching background and very little movement training. So it's what I usually do is I use the Franklin method as the primary part of the movement teaching, because if you can teach anybody to understand their body better and learn it with their attention on how their body's designed to move, it's so much easier to teach a whole group how to move better at the same time. Then the results are less random. That's always been my challenge as a teacher. If you have a group, a mixed level class, you have some people in the room that are really good movers.
Right.
And some people that probably are not. Probably more than not.
Yeah.
How do I level the playing field so everybody can get the most benefit out of it? And I found like the Franklin training has been the most influential part of that for me. And I think if you could really explain in simple terms how the body's designed and have people process that information with movement and touch and concentration, the learning curve is pretty dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be hard movement, because, you know, I think to move better, you have to get curious about simple movement. Not necessarily, you know, what makes you a good mover is doing simple things well. So that's how I approach it. Then I'll blend in some Pilates and yoga exercise in the 40-minute session, but it's built with every week there's a particular theme in terms of the body. Like the theme might be on the pelvis or the hip joint. First week, the next theme might be on the foot. Next theme might be. The theme every week will be a different aspect of the body, like posture, shoulders and neck, the spine. So I'll give them an experiential lesson of these parts of the body, and then we'll take it into a little bit of conditioning exercise. And it's the piece that I think the most important for me is how do I create a learning environment so everybody can get the most out of it? And I think for people to learn, you have to help them feel confident and relaxed.
Right.
Without that, only the people that are good movers are going to get something out of the exercise.
Yes, right.
And I think that's the challenge in the whole movement field.
Absolutely.
You know, the notion that if somebody's not getting it, it's just because they're not paying attention is actually not fully accurate.
Yeah.
You know, you got to heighten somebody's proprioception, their attention, a little bit of information about their body, and kind of blend that and layer that for someone to have time to process the information and actually have an insight.
Yes, and I love the fact that you mentioned making a person feel confident. I find in my own teaching that's such a pivotal piece in how a student will take in information and be able to integrate it, is the level of confidence that they feel with being in their body. And so I think that's often a piece that we overlook. We use all the kind of technical skills that we have to inform the body without really looking at the level of confidence a student might have about their ability, which is such a powerful piece in terms of...
It's so true. It's pretty amazing, because if you can get somebody to be confident and relaxed, it's so much easier to take in information.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's this overriding tension around performance and perfection.
Yes.
And self-criticism. And that's a big part of the coaching work too, is to helping people. You know, movement is a very demonstrative place for that, where you can visually see if somebody's getting it or if they have movement issues that they need to work on.
Right.
But there's all this internal stuff that's going on with everybody in their life.
Yeah.
It is the same. It's absolutely the same. In any area of your life where you feel confident, relaxed, and you're aware of your options,
yes,
you have a lot more freedom. Your freedom is much higher.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And I think it's such a crucial part of teaching. And part of the reason why, you know, I've started this Skillful Teaching Project is to try to build create an opportunity where we as movement teachers, where, you know, we're typically focused on the movement aspect, but we can expand our knowledge base into really looking at all of these layers that whether we are consciously aware of them, that we're attending to, you know, every time we're interacting with a student. Talking about all of this work and how your work has evolved, there was a thread that early on when you were talking about your mentor and how interesting it is that for me as an observer of your work, I would use the same words to describe you that you used to describe your mentor. And talking about the Embodying a Balanced Life program and these different aspects of how we can touch the people that we work with, is really, really quite reflective of the holistic approach that you have crafted in terms of your teaching. And it's really exciting to hear a teacher of your caliber and experience talking about all of these different layers. I'm just really appreciative of that.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I've always been way more impressed with people that are maintain their humility.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't think humility is a diminution of power. I think it's actually much more powerful.
Yeah.
And the level of arrogance that can happen when somebody reaches a particular level in their career.
Yes.
And I also think it's a hardness with that. And I just find that if you can show your humanness to your students, then it helps them see that they can do well too. You know, that we're all the same.
Yes.
And it's really just about application and your willingness to practice and be curious and keep taking steps in the direction that interests you.
Yeah. Well, you are a very strong example of that. And it's apparent when you look at what you've done and just hearing you talk about your path to doing what you do and that the level of curiosity and as you said in the beginning of the conversation, just being drawn to learning, continuously learning. I mean, I think that putting yourself in that situation over and over again of not knowing and being willing to expand your knowledge, such a crucial part of, as you said, maintaining humility. I mean, obviously not for everybody. I think for a lot of people, but you are certainly a very strong example of that constant curiosity.
I think that's the piece of the Pilates work that I think is really important for teachers to know is that your curiosity is what keeps the work alive. You know, when a teacher tells me that they're bored with teaching the same stuff, then that's just an interesting thing for me that they're not really paying attention to the work anymore.
Uh-huh.
I think it's, because I've got teacher training since 2000, and every single time I go through the teacher training again, I've learned something new because it's all new to me every time.
Yeah.
You know, even actually, I'm more curious about the simpler exercises now than I used to be.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I used to like to go, push to the level 3 and 4.
Yeah.
But now I'm really curious about the level 1 stuff and a whole new awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've kind of answered the question, but I wonder if perhaps you might articulate what your, one of the things that we talk a lot about in the skillful teaching community of the teachers I've been talking to and working with is just creating a clear vision for our teaching and really understanding, what gifts we have to offer and being able to see what our path is as a teacher. And I wonder if you might be able to articulate what particular vision as a teacher that you hold.
I'd say one thing is I'm teaching the Franklin training this year, the 3-week teacher training. The Franklin work, I've been very influenced by that on
uh-huh.
understanding the body from an evolutionary standpoint.
Uh-huh.
And how you can, I think what I believe people need to age well is they need to have some useful information about how their body body's design and how to use their attention to improve on how they're using themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that doesn't even have to be exercise related, but it's also a great prelude to exercise. So I think that work is something that I'm very interested in getting more out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think as teachers, like I mentioned earlier, they need to develop a little more hands-on ability part of their teaching, and that's part of my goal is to share that.
Yeah.
And also develop more assessment screenings for teachers, I think, because the movement field is so young.
Yes.
Everybody has very different protocols about how they approach the body.
Right.
I think we have to take into account people's lifestyle, that they don't have a ton of time. So it would be better to give them very specific exercises for their particular body that they can do daily as a way to create structural balance. And then they can do full workouts in a class when they can get there. But just as a way to work with themselves and really have better assessment skills to make somebody get better results with less time.
Right, right.
I think those things, there's some good information out there. There's a book called Movement by Ray Cook. You can see it as a functional movement screen. That's something that I'm incorporating into my studio.
Uh-huh.
And I just think there's just being open to what's out there instead of, the Pilates world is very small in comparison to the fitness world and the yoga world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But both can serve each other.
Mm-hmm.
This information that's available that's very useful, and I think the Pilates world has a lot to offer all of these other fitness modalities because of how specific our training is.
Yeah.
I think that my intention is to create an open environment for people to feel safe asking questions and share information together.
Uh-huh.
And enjoy our time together while we're learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take attention out of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and make a great environment where states that say, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, isn't that true? That's can be very difficult in a training or learning environment, particularly when you are, you've been teaching for some time and you there's an assumption that you have a fair bit of knowledge, and to enter a new environment and to be able to say that you don't know, or to be really honestly and authentically curious without feeling like you need to, you need to know.
Yeah, and that comes back to like teaching teachers about cueing, like just even from a scientific perspective, when you give somebody a verbal cue, that's cognitive. Meaning they have to take a thought and transfer it into a feeling.
Right.
And that's from a scientific perspective, been proven to be a hard thing to do.
Uh-huh.
So if our cueing isn't including giving people a better understanding of their body, so they can conceptualize what's going on and they can put their attention on it, it's no longer a cue, it's a goal.
Right.
And then I think that explains a lot of the random results that happen in a group class or in a math class. The people that have a concept in their body and they know how to put their attention on it are the ones that are going to get better results.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's part of what I want to include in my teaching, which I've been doing, is to give people a little bit of information about their body at the starting place. Give them a way to heighten their proprioception through different things you can do. You can do tapping, you can do a variety of things to heighten their senses. And then have that all be part of a lesson that helps them get the most out of the learning opportunity.
Right.
And then it changes. It changes everything in a very healthy way, and it becomes a nice exchange.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing. I think I'm not tied to a particular way of teaching. If someone can show me a better way to do something, I'm open to it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is exciting, and as it should be, I think. It's you know, that no.
I think so too. I mean, yeah, I think it gets a little strange when we need to hold on to things that are not actually even relevant anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Right. We get very tied to one way being the one and only way of doing something.
Yeah, which is basically fear-based approach. And it,
yes.
Now, through the fragment training, I realized there's a lot of cueing that we do. You know, that's traditional cueing. That's actually not accurate about how the body works.
Yes. You know, it's the one thing I've loved about studying the Franklin Method, for me as well, really astonishing. There were moments, you know, of learning from Eric where I just thought, I cannot believe that I have spent all these years saying something that is fundamentally not the way the body functions. And, you know, I mean, it was just, there were so many of those kind of aha moments that I took with me into my teaching and as a faculty member for Balanced Body as well, teaching teachers, it's actually pretty thrilling to be able to say, to just help them understand the truth about the way the body moves rather than teaching from a place of misunderstood metaphors and analogies and things that do not reflect how the body works at all.
It's true. It's really, and it's actually liberating because if you can get down to the level of how things actually work, then it actually eliminates confusion. And then there's a lot more freedom that can come with that because then you can incorporate metaphorical imagery. You can do all these things that are more about quality and mood.
Yeah.
But you still have that understanding of the anatomy and the actual moving, you know, working to the body.
Yes.
As a starting place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, it's been really fascinating to watch as I have incorporated some of the Franklin Method work into, you know, classes particularly, and just to watch people's understanding and their just complete, like, there's a like a truth that they arrive at where they really can feel and sense what I'm telling them, you know, in their body as being true, not as so many times we say something and the look on a student's face is that they want to believe you. You know, they want to trust you and believe you, and yet it's just not really happening for them.
Well, coming back to what you asked me about what was my vision, I think this is coming to it, is that it's really helping people trust the natural intelligence of their body and learn how to feel good and take care of their body for a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, I don't think it's necessary for the body to wear out.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there's still a lot of ways people train that they're wearing their body out.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You're wearing out their joints. But people don't tend to pay attention too much to their joints until their joints hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still big emphasis on muscles and a particular look.
Yes.
But I think you look better if you learn how to be in relationship with gravity and take care of all your body systems and be, you know, work for efficiency over effort.
Yeah, and I think to go back to something that we were talking about earlier, my experience of, you know, a body that has achieved that is you can look at a body and you can see that natural confidence and that sense of relaxation in terms of being strong and agile and just at ease all of the time, you know, watching somebody do something that is potentially very effortful and yet, you know, they're able to maintain that deep quality of balance.
Yeah, there you are. we went through another window.
That's okay. Oh no, you're gonna come away with this having heard one conversation, and I'll come away with it having heard another conversation. There was something I wanted to ask you, just because for the teachers that are going to be listening to this interview, which is if you could go back and give yourself as a younger teacher a piece of advice, you know, to help you kind of navigate your way forward. What might that be?
I would, for one, I would tell a younger teacher to enjoy the process of where they're at, whether even if they're a beginner, let them know that it's completely okay right where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And to practice a lot, do movements a lot, and actually find a mentor.
Uh-huh.
Work with somebody who you believe really sees you and that you connect with and you feel good when you're around them.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to be teaching movement, get some, also get potentially some hands-on training, mm-hmm. possibly a massage training, a simple one, something uh-huh. that's going to teach you how to touch yeah. as part of your work.
Uh-huh.
And I would take the Franklin work.
I just wanted to say thank you so much. I really am so grateful for your time, and it was such a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.